What is up, my friends? We wanted to drop this in the feed today to let you know about what is going on over at the Star Wars Universe podcast. Many of you that are fans of this show are also fans of Star Wars, and you should definitely be watching The Mandalorian. Even I, who am not a big Star Wars guy, I gotta say, I enjoyed The Mandalorian to some degree. That's high praise from me. And I'm just teasing, guys. Sorry. It was very well done, and I'm actually really excited about season two. But I am not on this podcast. This podcast is being done by Jeff, our good buddy Jeff Randall, Matthew Fox, Ashley Coffin, and I believe Paul Hoppe is on this episode. They got a great little quartet talking about Mandalorian season two, episode one. And if you like Mandalorian and you like what you hear here, please go subscribe. Or actually, don't wait. Do it right now. Go subscribe to the Star Wars Universe podcast, because this is your chance to catch it every week. So go right now. Jump from, you know, wherever your podcatcher is, you should be able to look up the Star Wars Universe podcast. Hit subscribe. And hey, if you throw a review in the iTunes store or whatnot, we'll give out a shirt next week to somebody who reviews the Star Wars Universe podcast this week, starting whatever today is, the, you know, November 2nd or whatever. So if you go subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, all those things, we will give a shirt away next week, because I really want everyone to get a chance to check out this new show. And here's your chance. This is episode one, but if you like Mandalorian, don't wait. Do it right now. Go subscribe, Star Wars Universe podcast. And now I'll turn it over to Matthew.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Star Wars Universe podcast. Friends, for the first time, we have new content to record on in quite a while, because we have just watched The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 1, The Marshal. And I'm here with Jeff Randall, Ashley Coffin, and Paul Hoppe to talk about this new episode, all the things we loved, all the things that might have raised an eyebrow or two, and what we think this sets up for the season to come. All that and more after this commercial break, over which we have absolutely zero, not at all, 100% no control. Welcome back. As I said, my name is Matthew, and I'm joined by three wonderful guests, which will make this so much fun to edit, because we are all soft-spoken people who I'm sure will never interrupt each other. So let's go around the horn. Jeff, first of all, how are you doing? How are you feeling about being back to Mandalorian?
Where are the wonderful guests? You promised me three.
You, sir, are a wonderful guest, even though you'll try to fight it.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Man, I'm so glad to be back to the Mandalorian. Like, we did Mando recap kind of a month after the fact or so, and
yeah,
it kind of felt like we took forever to get through it the first time, and I was just like, come on, let's watch the next one. So, like, when this one came out and we're leading up to it, we're getting the big hype, we're getting the hype rolling, I'm moving. Like, I moved from Florida, from Tampa, Florida to Birmingham, Alabama the weekend before the Mando came out, and I was like, I've got to be set up before that happens, because I refuse to miss it, first off.
Oh, for sure.
But I also refuse to miss talking about it, because I know it's going to be amazing. But, like, because I was packing up all of my electronics and stuff, I kind of stayed away, or I was kind of forced to stay away from any sort of spoilers or anything. So, like, all of this episode was just brand new, wide open for me, and I was so pleased. Oh, my goodness gracious.
We did an episode one recap, and you were very much missed on that, but I totally get why. And yeah, I hadn't seen any trailers either, so I was super psyched for this. Ashley, what about yourself? How are you doing tonight, and how are you feeling about jumping back into Mando Land?
Really good, Matthew. This was awesome. It was so jam-packed and quick that it almost didn't feel like it was as long as it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of flew by, and I knew we were going into this, we were going to get a 50-minute episode, so I was expecting it to be long, and it just went by in a wink. Mm-hmm. And then our third guest, Paul. Paul, how are we doing tonight?
Pretty good, as well as one can be these days.
Thanks for saying it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just how it is, right?
Escapism uber alles. That's what we're going for tonight.
Exactly. I enjoyed Chapter 9, Tremors, for the most part. Spoilers ahead.
Goddamn Rec Room, didn't you? You son of a bitch.
Chapter 9, Deadwood turns into Tremors. Like, yeah, I mean, there were some spots, but I, yeah, it was nice to actually see kind of where the show was actually heading after season one. And I feel like there's a certain level of confidence actually in the storytelling that's kind of, it's kind of grown a little bit.
Yeah. How so? I think I have an idea of what you're talking about, but say more about what you mean.
I don't know. Like, just the first time that, like, we see, like, Mando walking. I mean, I think the first shot was, like, him and, like, the child, like, just pushing the, you know, basically he's out with his stroller going to an underground fight club type place, you know, to or a gladiatorial kind of thing. And just kind of the way, I mean, you know, he's always carried himself a certain way, but, you know, he's got his shiny armor, his jetpack, like, there's just, I don't know, there was a little bit of a different feel to the storytelling, which I was talking to someone earlier who was saying, you know, oh, well, you know, season two is usually kind of downhill. And I'm like, well, actually, I think season two is often like one of the best seasons for a lot of shows, because season one, I think there's often like a certain level of awkwardness. And I'd say Mandalorian actually didn't have that much of that. But, you know, you get to have characters that you've seen before, right? You get to meet them again. You're like, oh, we're back on Tatooine now. And there's just a different feel to that in a show that I enjoy before they get to like season 8, 9, 10. And you're like, why are we still doing this? You know, although this is a show I feel like could go like 10 seasons if they actually went kind of wide enough with it, because the universe is so big, right? And this felt like the first time we were on a planet that felt like it was a planet with multiple places.
Yeah.
What, you mean every planet is not the one city that they go to on it?
I mean, that's what I've heard, but it's all rumors.
Yeah, when they mentioned another, I think it was Mos Espa's or Mos Espa, a third city,
right,
on Tatooine.
Right.
I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
There's three cities?
Please, the first line of my notes is, wow, we're going back to Tatooine. Like, because we had a long discussion about this in our recap about the places that we keep going to. I was like, look where we're going. Wow.
And it's funny because in that recap discussion, I had said that even though it was very brief, one of the things I liked most was that we got to learn a little bit more about the Sand People, or the Tuskens, we should call them. Mm-hmm. And the story was very much reminiscent of a kind of modern cowboy story where it's about kind of, you know, getting past the prejudice against the indigenous natives and realizing that they have a lot of wisdom and a lot more perspective to share and can be your aides. And be your helpers. And so to actually get that story and go that deep on it, I just absolutely loved, because I loved that it was, but it also didn't just become like constant fighting and bickering and look at the prejudice. It was just, okay, there's some prejudice and we have to get past this. And then we're past it and we're all going to work together. And I really loved that about this story.
Me too.
Yeah, this is kind of the tropey old Western, like, we all have to band together to kill the man eater.
Right.
Kind of story. And I love that it can be reduced down to that. Like, every Mando story so far in this series is like easily boiled down to a Western trope. Yeah. But, you know, the old Western stories, the old Western tropes, whatever, like, you can call it a trope, but it feels like this particular series puts such a unique spin on it and shines a different kind of light on it. And, you know, it's like they tell that old story in the new way, and they've just continued doing that in this season two. And I'm so impressed that, like, they keep that old stuff fresh somehow.
All right, God.
Great episode, guys. We're done.
All done.
It's particularly interesting to me because, funnily enough, Paul and I just did an entire episode on tropes for the Superhero Ethics podcast that came out literally yesterday. And it's funny because we've talked about generally why we don't like tropes, but that what can make them interesting is when there's all these like new interesting twists on them.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. That's exactly what this does. You know, it takes them, but it puts some new spin on them, new direction on them. And even the other thing that I was really impressed by, and Paul, I'm not sure if this is what you meant about the confidence, but I think it ties in. One of the things that I often don't like about a second season is that, you know, on a show like this one where there is an Uber story, but it's mostly very episodic, by the second season, there's now this feeling of, wait, no, now we've got to get more into the main story. And so the episodicness really starts to fade and it becomes just about, you know, moving the main plot along.
Yeah.
This was incredibly episodic. Like, I think it kind of put some of the pieces on the board, such as like the armor that we think is probably from Boba Fett, maybe one or two other like leads to track down. But there was no mention at all of, you know, Moff Gideon or like the hunt for the child or, you know, what the Imperials want or any of that stuff. And I really loved that.
Yes.
It reminded me a lot of like Burn Notice, actually, the way just specifically it treated its kind of overarching plot where, you know, here you've got it is very episodic, right? But it comes in. They come into it from this is the overarching thing. He's trying to find a home for the child, right?
Right.
And he gets a lead and goes somewhere, and it looks like it's going to be one trope, like shootout at the OK Corral kind of thing, right? And then it takes a right turn, and it's a totally different, you know, it's a trope or it's a, you know, a type of story. But, you know, there's like kind of sort of multiple head fakes. It's like, oh, he's going to find a Mandalorian. Oh, it's not a Mandalorian. Oh, they're going to fight. Oh, they're not going to fight. You know?
Oh, they're best friends now.
Oh, they're getting attacked by these creatures. Oh, these creatures are actually, you know, friendly creatures that the, you know, the Tuscans are down with.
Oh, yeah, the sharp doggos.
Yeah, the sharp dogs.
I love that he could speak. Did he do that in the first season, the Tuscan speaking?
I think he used, like, more sign language, kind of.
Okay. Yeah. He was real deep into it this time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the first time it was just the sign language, and the rookie was just like, what are you doing? He's like,
right,
giving him your monocular.
Yeah. Keeping us alive so we can respect them and cross their territory.
Well, I have another problem with the Tuscans. They're like, you know, we have to take down these monsters. We have these 10-foot muskets or crossbows. I mean, don't look at it over that C4 and other badass weapons over there. We're going to use our muskets and crossbows. Like, what?
Are you talking about the Bantha Ballista?
I don't want to talk about the Bantha Ballista, but it's very upsetting. Do you know how much like that thing had to go through? Because then he electrocuted it. It probably wasn't dead when it was still in there.
Oh, the Bantha that was on the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean,
that was rough.
I've got some things to say.
Sorry, I'm jumping all
about
the
treatment of Bantha. What's the plural of Bantha? Is it Banthas or just Bantha?
We could probably make it up.
I think it's Banthas for the sake of sanity.
Okay, we'll go with Banthas. Should I say what I have to say?
Yeah,
basically, the treatment of Banthas is horrible.
It was messed up.
But in this way that I think actually somewhat mirrors some real life treatment of animals where, you know, you see the Tuscan Raider, like, with this giant toothbrush brushing a Bantha's teeth, which I thought was awesome. I thought that was great, you know? But then they're like, okay, now we're going to feed you to the dragon. But dragons don't like dirty Bantha teeth. Right, exactly. You got to clean up the Bantha before
sacrificing.
You
can't have bad breath. The dragon won't come after it.
And they, like, made it have the peace of mind to want to run away. He's like, I'm going to stay.
It's kind of sad though because then that Bantha survived, right? Because the dragon was like, oh no, I want to eat this other meal. I already had Bantha for breakfast or yesterday, but then
you
they
can't have Bantha twice in one day.
Right. It's just too much.
Was that the same one?
It's unclear. Ugh. So I'll say it. I'll pretend it's not. Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you survive dragon one time, like, you should get a pass for the rest of your life.
But did they only put the bombs on one of them? Oh. Okay, I don't want to think about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say, I think it's, and Paul, you've brought this up a lot, but it's something I've really come to think about as well. One of my only real complaints about the Star Wars universe is that they tell us when to care about a particular form of life and when not to.
Yeah.
And there's no consistency to that. And
that's true.
I think especially we see this in terms of droids, where there are some droids who get to tell funny jokes, and so we care about them, and some droids who are, you know, battle droids and just we can slaughter them by the thousands.
Right.
Roger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Granted, if you said Roger, Roger to me that many times, I would shoot you as well. But you know,
I've like almost never heard that for the anyway. Never.
Yeah. What do they say in Spanish?
Entendido. They're like, I understand.
And is it significantly less annoying because of that?
Oh, way less annoying. I had no idea. Like, it's almost kind of cute. I don't know. It's fine. But then, like, you listen to it in English, you're like, oh my goodness. I think they say Roger in German too, and it's awful. So
that makes sense. But yeah. So anyway, and it felt like that. They show the Tuskens really caring for animals, both the way they take care of the Banthas, but also I think the fact that the Mandalorian like connects with, you know, the really sharp toothed dog,
yeah.
Is part of why they're like, okay, the Mandalorian's a good guy because he like mm-hmm. gets animals, and
yeah.
And I kind of get that maybe what they're trying to show is like that these folks have a very different understanding of animal life and like that they do have a real respect for it, but also willing to sacrifice it when needed. But it just like after the first time you showed it, like I wish there had been some other way to get like the dragon to eat all the
right. explosive.
You know, you need to show us two different Banthas in life-threatening circumstances.
Right, exactly.
And yeah, the one at the top, it ate the one right off the bat. In the
the one that was by the fountain.
Just minding its own business.
Yeah, just chilling.
I thought it was kind of funny that when the great dragon first showed up, like we as viewers had no idea what was going on. Everybody else is running away, and like the marshal Timothy Olyphant is like just standing on the side watching, just like yep, there it goes again.
Yep.
It's another day of this happening. Oh, he's going for the Bantha. Okay. Cool. Great.
And I will say, I don't know if these things came from this book, but on our last episode, I talked about the novel Kenobi, which is, I think at this point, my favorite Star Wars novel, which, given the quality of some of them, is not an incredibly hard bar to top, but some of them are fairly good. Actually, some of them are very good. But one of the things that story does is that one also goes deep into the like traditions, understandings, and cultural mores of the Banthas. Of the Tuskens.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how the one thing that they're afraid of is the Kryat dragon.
Right.
And I don't. It may well have been mentioned in something else, and so both the book and the show are taking from that. But it was kind of cool to me to hear that referenced again, and I it feels like either they're acknowledging the Kenobi novel in some way, or that the Kenobi comes from a shared source. But it was cool to kind of have the Tusken people developed more in a way that fits the existing canon.
Continuity.
Yeah, at first I thought it was going to be like a Sarlacc or something, because it's hard to really know exactly what that is or was, because right. we really only kind of see some tentacles. Yeah, but
don't they like not move?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, we see it kind of in Return of the Jedi, but, right? But I don't think we see like really like the whole creature. Mm. But apparently the Krayt dragon ate the Sarlacc. So everything's eating each other. That's I guess that's just nature. I mean, I had some feelings for the Krayt dragon. You know, I'm like, whatever. It's just trying to get a snack, you know? Like, I mean, honestly, like my sort of emotional investment in the outcome was like not super high, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. if it was maybe going to eat, like, the child, like, I might have felt differently. But I was like, yeah, all these people, these don't seem like wonderful people. So,
he like, lost me at acid puking.
They look
puking.
More like food.
Once he started puking, I was like, kill that monster.
Maybe it's just indigestion.
He's quick, too. You got to kill the quick puking monsters.
You know, heartburn's a bitch, man. What are you going to do?
He's like, let me go up top of my mountain where I have perfect puking, you know, what's the word?
Range.
Yeah.
Line of sight. Is I think what you're
talking about. Perfect puking line of sight.
It's an AoE attack with very good line of sight.
Nah, man, the Krayt dragon is obviously a black dragon. They belch acid.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Fair.
One thing to sort of contrast with the what I would consider fairly poor treatment of animals was the droids, and something that we had mentioned about, you know, in our season one recap was kind of like, is, you know, Mando going to have kind of grown from interacting with, you know, the assassin turned nurse droid, right? And the answer is, I think, pretty clearly yes. right? That when they go back to when he goes to the hangar there, the repair shop or whatever it is, she's like, oh, you know, droids, stay away from me. He's like, oh, that's fine, you know. And in season one, he was like, no, get away from my ship. Like,
yeah, keep those bastards away from my ship.
Yeah, I love that. I thought of you guys. So I was like, oh, yay, right away. He's a better person.
Yeah, right out of the gate.
Yeah. I would have appreciated it a little bit more if she had not been like so vocal and pointing it out, if it were a little bit more subtle.
Oh, sure, like, sure.
Yeah, sure, let him do the thing. And she was like, okay.
Yeah.
And like, if that was it, then it would have been a little bit better, but it was a bit heavy-handed this time around.
Once she was commenting on it?
Yeah, where she was just like pointing it straight out, just like, oh my god, no, are you sure? Because you hate droids, remember? Remember that one time that you showed up here and you like shot one of them? Yeah, you hate droids. You're not supposed to be like this.
I'm mixed on it, though, because I agree with you. Like, I think the perfect way to do it would be just the droids go over, he kind of reflexively looks up and starts to object, and then is like, eh, never mind. But also part of what we've established about her character is that she just says every thought that ever comes into her head.
That's true.
So it's That's kind fair. Of like, it's That's a fair. Little bit on the nose, but it's also very fitting for who she is.
Right.
Like, you can sell them to me. Yeah. I mean, not really, but yeah, really. Just kidding, not kidding.
Just kidding, not kidding. How much do you want for it? Give me this. I need this baby.
I think her being like telling them not to go over, I think made perfect sense once she saw him. I think, you know, I kind of hear, you know, Jeff, what you're saying. If it's more about after that when he was like, no, it's cool, instead of her kind of being like, oh, okay, you know, being like, oh, you have grown as a character.
Yeah, it's like she comes in saying like, ah, the writers obviously did something for your character arc.
Right.
You have grown since you've been here.
But she does pretty much say her thoughts, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, which is good.
So obviously what happens on Tatooine is kind of the main part of the story, but what'd you guys think of the first scene we had where we went into, as Paul said it,
John Leguizamo?
Pigman Fight Club.
Man, John Leguizamo.
I don't think that's exactly how it's... Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was really surprising that was him.
Oh, really? I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, that was John Leguizamo.
He was the Cyclops?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I was just enjoying all the violence. That sweet PG-13 violence.
Yeah, so what was the deal there? Was that the idea that they each had like little personal shield generators, and so that was why like you kept getting the blue flash, but that you could eventually knock your way through the shields and kill the person? Is that how the gladiator fight worked?
How else do you indicate health bars?
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to do it.
I found it kind of confusing too. I was like, is somebody about to get a limb chopped off here? What's going on? Isn't this Star Wars? Like, why does everybody have two hands still?
I keep forgetting.
I don't understand.
But it cut
his left hand off.
It did, I think, though, also nicely help to set the tone of this is more of the, you know, post-imperial, not really a republic, you know, kind of like barbarian lands where, like we've devolved into gladiator fights again.
Right. Although just imperial and gladiator fights are not mutually exclusive. I mean, if we just think about the Colosseum and Rome and I agree with what you're saying, but and then, you know, in terms of tropes, like they then go for the like, you know, oh, bad guy kills one of the other bad guys or whatever, like one of his people to like demonstrate how badass he is.
Which is literally one of the traits Paul mentioned as hating.
That's like near my number one, yeah.
It's pointless.
The way they did it, though, was not as... It worked better than it usually does.
Right.
It didn't bother me really in that case. I was like, oh, there's that thing. But like, it kind of made sense within the context. And then everybody scatters, you know, and it was actually, cause it was less about him showing how badass he was, which is usually like the entirety of it. And it was like, basically like, okay, now give me your armor, you know?
It seemed to be like the inciting incident for the ambush on the Mando rather than just being like a display of badassery.
Yeah.
Or even like they avoided the whole like, oh, it's fine, I fixed this fight because he was supposed to go down in the fourth and ha ha ha, I won all this money. Like, he just straight up was like, oh, this isn't going the way I want it. Bang.
Right.
And I think to also establish that he, like, no one else was going to come out and be like, sir, you broke the rules. Like, he sets the rules. This is
right,
his place.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Which I think gave him some nice power.
This was his place.
Yeah. Now, some other creatures that we didn't see, their interiors are his place.
And, oh, man.
And so what did we all think about Mando's treatment of him, which was basically the Batman equivalent of, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. Whereas this is going one further of, you won't die by my hand, but my hand will do the thing that will lead directly to your death.
Oh, I totally support it.
Totally fine with it, too.
Totally fine
with it.
I mean,
when he threw the line up over the light, I was like, oh, shit, we're going full Batman. Here we go. I figured he was going to, at some point, be like, swear to me.
Just don't hook your pants.
I mean, I thought it was going to be a, like, I'm going to leave you hanging in this incredibly brutal part of town, and who knows if anyone will find you or if they'll come and mug you and kill you. I hadn't realized it was quite, I'm going to leave you here because these hungry monsters are going to eat you the moment I shut out this light.
I thought when he turned around, he was going to pop him in the head. I was like, oh, he's just going to shoot him. But
It wasn't my hand.
It was so much worse.
kick his skull in or so. I mean, when he said that line, I'm like, oh, he's definitely going to kill this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but not in the most obvious way. This guy isn't going to survive this encounter.
It was a real Tom Cruise and Collateral kind of thing. Like, I didn't kill him. I just shot him. The bullets in the fall killed him.
That's very true. That's super true.
But yeah, I mean, that person had just, like, killed one of their people and, like, whatever. Like, I don't know.
He was not one of nature's noblemen by any means.
Right.
And so because there we were setting up some of the Uber plot. The idea was that he had information about who Yoda's people. I didn't quite understand what was Mando wanted from him.
Right.
About the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
This guy apparently hunts and kills Mandalorians and takes their armor because Beskar is really expensive.
Right.
Or it goes for a lot when you hawk it. And so he knew where multiple Mandalorian people were, obviously because he hunts them. So he needs to get that information from the John Leguizamo character.
Okay, got it. So this wasn't about anything involving the, like, he wants to know where the child's people are, but there was nothing we saw that was about advancing that particular storyline.
No,
this
was a side mish.
The way that he was going to go about it is, instead of, like, directly just looking for these Yoda-style creatures, he's going through his people because his people have a history of conflict with, you know, the wizards.
Yeah. That was the part of
wizards. So if he can find his people, if he can find the other Mandalorians, then he can start forming a trail of leads through the other coverts and track down where this kid's where he comes from.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense. Which, again, it's interesting that this whole thing is based on a misunderstanding that the Jedi are his race. Instead of, like, which I assume we're going to... I'm looking forward to Ahsoka being the walking exposition machine of just like, no, let me actually tell you how this all works, Mando.
Ahsoka's going to show up and be like, oh shit, Yoda!
She's going to be like, stab him right under the occipital lobe. Oh wait, never mind.
Well, this is supposed to take place 5 years after Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
So,
give or take, yeah, right?
I just still, like, I guess we were saying last time because the universe was so big or whatever, but, like, really nobody knows what a Jedi is, like, 5 years after Return of the Jedi?
So here's... I realize that you haven't played the game Mage the Ascension much.
All the time.
But apparently what we're supposed to believe is that the Jedi have level 5 Arcane.
Right.
So they're just telling everybody, like, we didn't exist, like a whole world Jedi mind trick?
You didn't see me.
Yeah, because this is the second time this has happened.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
The last Jedi are killed, and they were all over the galaxy, and now, 15 years later, no one's ever heard of them.
Your archaic religion.
Yeah, and like...
Five? I think it's only 5.
We were saying this last time, like, if the Mandalorian is raised in the way of the Mandalorians, like, a huge part of the Mandalorians... like, whole culture and ideas has been the Jedi are our enemy, we found victory against the Jedi, we fight the Jedi, you know, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So the idea that the Mandalorian would be raised in, like, the way without once hearing about this just – I'm sure there's going to be some explanation they give us, and I hope it makes sense, or maybe we're going to laugh at it, but I just want them to in some way address that, because you're right, Ashley, like, it just, there's such a big logic gap there that makes no sense.
Okay. I'm going to take the opposite viewpoint, or hope, and I kind of almost hope they don't really address it too much, because given everything that we've seen in all the different, you know, canon media, like, it can't possibly make sense. So, like, just be like, yeah, I mean, maybe lampshade it in, like, a humorous way or whatever, but, like, just don't come up with, like, midichlorians, you know, the second. Like,
I agree.
Like,
with
don't
you
come
that.
Up with something that really, really is painful and doesn't make sense. It's like, just let it be, like, the time is. You know, we're traveling in space, there's relativity or something, like, you know, years aren't really years, it's complicated.
I don't want the big midichlorian level explanation, I just mean, like, the much smaller, like, how did the Mandalorians of this show become so different from the Mandalorians we've had in the canon?
Oh, okay.
And,
yeah,
and how did the knowledge of the Jedi, like, fall out of that? Like, is it that there's now, like, a great silence about the Jedi because of something that happened in the Purge or...
Right.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
And this episode kind of goes a little bit farther in kind of going against the, like, oh, well, you know, everybody just collectively forgot, or, you know, nobody knows about it. Like, they had a flashback where they literally watched the second Death Star explode on TV.
Yeah.
So, like, information gets around places.
Right. Although, like, does everybody know that that was, like, all the Jedi stuff that was going on there? I mean, that was in private on the Death Star. Like, Luke just took a little shuttle back to Endor and, like, you know, burned his pops in the woods. And, like, nobody else saw the Force ghosts, right? Except, like, maybe Leia, you know. I mean...
I bet they'd ask questions about the lightsaber. Did he ever use
Who
it?
Who saw the lightsaber, though?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Right? Just like his pals and the Ewoks. The Ewoks.
Didn't he use it when he saved everybody from the sand monster?
That happened.
Okay.
Well, but again, who was all there?
And also, I mean, in the post-Quels, which granted happened, you know, many years after this, but they've established that, like, the legend of Luke Skywalker is so much that Rey has heard of it, you know? And she's not exactly, like, plugged into the most mainstream news sources.
Right. But again, it's like a legend, and it's, like, 30-something years later.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to being like, that's, like, you know,
that
the 60s.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Right. Like, even now, it's, like, this the 80s. From our, I mean, literally, right? I mean, because the time difference is supposed to be the same.
Yeah.
Right. But, like, we've heard of the Beatles. I mean, like...
Right, exactly, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, or, like, 80s bands, you know, even if you didn't grow up then. Like, you know it's a thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Luke Skywalker's, like, the Beatles of the galaxy.
I think he's more like the hair metal, is what Paul is saying.
Yeah. I think Kenobi's more of the Beatle.
Oh, okay.
I want to hold your hand.
Well done. Good exercise.
That was strong. That was very strong.
So here is honestly my biggest complaint. Did anyone feel like we didn't get anywhere near enough of the child?
Oh, like, yes.
We got some cute scenes.
And hid. Dude,
I only audibly said "aw" I think 4 times, and I say it every time he's there.
And what was about the Bantha? So,
but yeah.
Well, I think we got some moments of him being cute, but they're, like, he didn't do anything that in any way affected the plot. There was no, like, moment of him interacting with Mando. He didn't use Force things in any way to affect, which I'm fine if he doesn't use the Force every episode. But I did think it was interesting that we had, like, no, like, consequent. He was just, like, you know, a cute thing that Mando was lugging around.
Yes. So I like that it wasn't about him in this episode. Mm. Like, the whole first season was all about the child. It's, you know, they're chasing me because I took the child. They want the child. They want the child. They want to kill the child.
The child.
It's all about the child. But then now it's about, like, this episode was about Mando and Mandalorian armor and his people. And the child is just, like, a side piece.
Well, and what there was one episode in season one that really wasn't about, I mean, the child wasn't really in it.
The Bill
Except
Burr.
For like a minute, right?
Mm-hmm. Is that the the one entirely in space?
Where Bill Burr pushes him down?
I mean, no, the first episode. I mean, there might be a second one. But so I kind of had a theory about this. And I think in the first episode of season one, you know, the show's called The Mandalorian, right?
Right.
And I think they primarily established the character of the Mandalorian in episode one in season one. And I feel like they probably deliberately wanted to kind of reestablish, you know, Mando as the center character. You know, it's like, it's not Mandalorian and the child. It's like, you know, the Mandalorian. And I think the rest of the season will be increasingly about the child and will have, you know, will have more impact on the plot and what happens, like, in actually taking action. But I felt like this was actually probably very deliberate to kind of focus on that one character above all, especially since you're introducing a second character who has a lot of agency in the plot. Deadwood, whatever his name is.
Cobb. Yeah, no. I think they said his name was Cobb Vanth.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Cobb Vanth.
Yeah.
The Marshal.
The Marshal, yes. And I mean, that was, you know, the title of the episode was like The Mandalorian, The Marshal. So like, you know, I think it very much focused on the two of them, and I think probably fairly deliberately kind of neglected the child to an extent. And I mean, you know, what is enough Baby Yoda? Like, that's not a thing, right?
did you guys notice, like
still freaking adorable, even so with, cute. Like, my notes actually say Baby Yoda still blank adorable needs more screen time, but
what, you didn't think it was enough where he was sitting in between Mando's feet getting eyed by the dog?
Right, yeah, that was hilarious. The best moment though was when, I mean, like, they flipped up their own screen, right? Like, closed the little egg crib thing. That wasn't what Mando did. Like, right, when Mando's like, oh, it's about to get real in here.
Uh-huh. He closed
and the child's
own...
like, phew!
Yeah,
he
it was really...
He saw the whistling birds come out, and he was just like...
Oh, exactly, it's like, uh-oh.
Like, presses the button and dives in, like, I'm out.
Yeah, that was kind of awesome. And yeah, I do think that theory makes sense. They're intentionally trying to not have the focus on him be 100%, which... It's interesting because, I mean, I think they know, like... Baby Yoda has like taken over the marketing 100%.
But yeah.
It's a great thing. I will also say... Jeff, like you, I didn't see any spoilers. I didn't see any trailers. You know, the one thing I'd seen was the picture that I saw a lot. In part, it's one of the ones that I used in the publicity for this. And it showed I think four characters. It showed Baby Yoda in the front. And then it showed the Mandalorian. It showed Cara Bay. I'm sorry, Cara Dune, but I'm helping you out, Jeff.
I mean, Cara Bay is right.
Cara Bay is accurate.
Yeah, exactly. And then it showed this guy with, like, red skin and, like, spiky things coming out of his head. And he didn't look like a Darth Maul type, but he looked like that something else of that variety. And so I was like, oh, okay, I wonder who that character is and what kind of major role he's going to play. No, he dies in the first 5 minutes. Like, I thought that was just such a brilliant little marketing thing of, like, here's an interesting character. Nope, he's dead.
Nope. You thought you had a fun Zyrek? Nah.
Mm-hmm. Womp Rats, guys. They talked about Womp Rats a lot.
They did.
I really liked it.
And one of the things that I love about the world building of this episode is, like, they had a phrase that the Marshal used that was, you know, sometimes both suns shine on a Womp Rat's tail. Yeah. I was like, what the hell is that?
It's so that country, but like Tatooine specific. I was like, that is one of those like country like expressions. Like,
right, but that's like a Tolkien level kind of building.
Yeah, for sure.
These guys would come up with their own goofy ass phrases like that.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's interesting, and again, I now want to dig deeper to see if there's more source material than just that Kenobi novel, but that is something they reference all the time. Like, they talk about, like, the two suns and, like, you know, second sunrise or first sunrise and, you know, like, it's a good day when both suns are shining on you, things like that. So that's kind of been established as part of the lingo of Tatooine, at least in that one of their plays. Mm-hmm. But it just sounded great.
Yep.
And I have to say, I think we talked about this a bit, but I want to kind of circle back to it again, because again, it's such the breaking of the trope. I'm really glad. I kept waiting for the moment when, like, the marshal just betrays our hero, or, you know, something goes wrong, or they prove that they're all just out to, like, lure the Tuskens into a trap. And the fact that it was just like, no, we're going to work together, and we're actually going to work together through the end of the show, like, through the end of the episode. That was really kind of surprising. Friends. Yeah.
I mean, it got to the point to where Mando was like, take care of the child. He's like, okay, but what are you going to do? He's like, I don't know, but here we go. Yeah.
Which I think is Mandalorian for hold my beer.
Yeah, right.
Like,
that sounds about accurate.
I don't think...
He jokes with him, like, now you tell him that it wasn't me that broke this. You did that. You tell him you did that.
You did it.
Yes, I don't know if they'll ever meet. It wouldn't actually make sense in universe for them to meet, but R2-D2 and Mando would get along really well, I think.
Probably really well.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Who was that guy at the end?
That was Boba Fett.
It had to be Boba Fett, right?
Yeah, that was the actor that played that, Django.
Yeah.
And who was
the, yeah, in the, like the like, in the
he was cloned.
Yeah. So he's yeah. Oh, so he's supposed to be alive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be? Oh shit.
Yeah.
And I mean, his armor looks like partially digested, right? Like,
yeah. I had just seen that actor so many times in a million things, like I didn't even think twice about it. I was like, oh, look, that guy. Good for him. He's still getting roles.
Good for him. He's still getting work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I
didn't put it together.
You know, most of last season, it was not only episodic, but it was kind of like Planet of the Week. And like, we went back to Tatooine and then we went back to Navarro. But other than that, everything was different. Do you think is Tatooine going to become somewhat of a home base for the show this season? Or at least, is there a lot more plot to still be done on Tatooine?
I mean, I'm just going to say yes, because we are always in Tatooine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feels like that's kind of the hub.
I mean, you don't show
Star Wars.
You don't show Boba Fett there, like, if you're not going back, right? Like,
right.
And Boba Fett was probably the one who found Fennec's body.
Oh, in, yeah, that's right? A good point. I didn't made that connection, but that would make a lot of sense. And so maybe this is all on Tatooine, or maybe they follow them somewhere, you know?
Right, or maybe, like, in season 3, they go back to Tatooine, and then Boba Fett has lines, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know.
What, understood is not enough for you?
I meant in this show, but yes, I guess that's...
He's no good to be dead.
Understood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to that, especially because I keep saying, you know, I really want more of the Mandalorian lore. I don't know if the show is going to take this direction, but one thing that gets established in a lot of the novels is that Boba Fett is like an outsider to the Mandalorians. Like that what he does of, you know, selling his you know, DNA to the cloners and then kind of sticking around to help teach them is considered really like a violation of the Mandalorian code and the way.
Right.
You mean Jango?
That's what Jango
does. Jango does. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Boba's not that. Boba is obviously his son, but I'd be curious to see, like, is that something that's going to continue to play? Is Mando going to see Boba as like a fellow Mandalorian? Is he going to see him as someone who like betrayed the code and like they've, you know, been taught like, don't ever be like this guy. Like I have no idea which way that's going to go. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Yeah, the question that I have is Boba, like, is he allowed to be part of, like, is he allowed to call himself a Mandalorian? Like, obviously not anymore because he took the helmet off, but, like, was he before?
Right.
But that wasn't even a thing then, though, right? Like, the whole helmet thing, like, when he was a kid anyway?
Yeah, because back then, I mean, we saw numerous times in both the Clone Wars and in the Rebels TV shows, which are canon, much more so than the books I keep talking about, we saw Mandalorians taking off their helmets. And so whatever's happening with Mandalorians taking off their helmets in this show, The Hold the Way, that's something that either exists only for like a particular kind of Mandalorian that wasn't talked about before, or is a
like
new development.
Diaspora.
Yeah, Diaspora or something like that.
Yeah.
Or
like was like maybe developed in response to the Purge. Maybe that's like, this is how we survive now.
Yeah.
Like, it's not our ancient way. But maybe it draws on an ancient way that not everybody, right. I don't know, maybe it's like the warriors, the Mandalorian warriors, but not, although we saw a bunch who took their helmets off back in the...
I mean, it would make sense if one of the things is that now, like during the purge, you know, they were all hunted and destroyed, that there's a kind of like anonymity is our safety, you know, and the idea of like, right. We have to keep our helmets on always. And also there's, you know, I mean, like when you are driven out of a place and persecuted because of a faith or because of a creed, that becomes so much more important to you. It's like, we have to keep this alive because they're trying to destroy it. So it would make sense that the whole like Mandalorian way would become much more devout in this time.
Yeah.
Well, not just that, but like Beskar steel is damn near impenetrable to blaster fire. So like, you keep the helmet on so you don't get shot in the head.
Right, maybe a bunch of people got shot in the back of the head, like, and they're like, okay, yeah. just keep your helmet on all the just time. They can sneak up on you, but you'll be okay. Like,
yeah, they thought they were safe, like, eating at home, and they got shot while, like, eating with their families and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Also very Deadwood, Wild Bill. Yeah. Anyway, but
God, I love that show.
We should do a whole PandaVision stuff on Deadwood, because that show was so good.
Can we just not do that special, the new one? I didn't like it.
Did you see it?
Oh, didn't see they did like a one or two episode, like,
honestly, the first season alone was so good. The second season is decent, but the first season is just so good. But
I haven't watched any of it.
Oh, it's very good.
Oh, Jeff, you'd love it.
Yeah.
I am a fan of Timothy Olyphant, so I would agree. And Ian McShane.
Yeah.
He's amazing in it.
Yep.
But we should probably get back to Star
Wars.
Oh, yeah, just in terms of, like, hiding, sort of being covert and, like, always keeping your helmet on. It's like, I guess nobody sees your face, but, like, all your helmets look the same. Like, you know, it's like, I am a Mandalorian. Whereas, like, I feel like they could mostly hide in plain sight. They're like, nope, I could be from the core system. I don't know. I could be from Tatooine. It's like, Mandalorian.
Just get your helmet off ever.
Like, they wear their identity on their, you know, their armor is their identity. I mean, so, like, maybe they could then be covert. Like, if they're like, we always keep our helmets on, but, like, they don't really. But then they don't know it's the same person, but they do. So, I don't know.
I guess I'm thinking of it more in terms of, like, the HBO TV show The Watchmen, where the idea is that the cops all wear masks so that no one can figure out who they are and go to their homes.
Oh, that makes sense. I haven't seen that, but...
Yeah. Oh, really? You'd like that, I think.
It's very good.
It's so good.
I remember the first time I saw a cop in a balaclava in New York, though, and I was like, this doesn't seem like a development. I do not think this is good.
Yeah, that was definitely a different direction that you're going.
Yeah, not that I want people going to people's houses and doing whatever.
So any other kind of last thoughts before we start to wrap up? I guess any kind of predictions? What do you think is going to – I think it's pretty clear that we are now we have to have a fight between two Mandalorians about who gets to keep the armor. Like, we didn't have that with the Marshal. I think we have to have it with Boba Fett. What else do people – or disagree with that one?
Ooh,
but
I think he'll get his armor back. I think he's definitely going to get his armor back. Boba Fett, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Does he want his armor back, though?
Yeah, like, is he just living on Tatooine?
He could go get it from the Jawas.
Yeah.
Right, like, why doesn't he have it?
Well, he looks like, you know, he's just living his life on Tatooine. He got an apartment. He's probably seeing some girl. He busts tables at the local watering hole. Like, he's like, God damn it. Now I got to get involved again.
Yeah.
Just when I thought I was out.
You pull me back in.
I mean, I could easily see something where our hero gives him his armor back. He's like, oh my God, a fellow Mandalorian. Like, right. Here you go. Mm-hmm. And then is betrayed. And so, like, all the things we thought would happen this time, I could see happening with Boba Fett later.
But, you know, along with that, that whole, oh my God, a fellow Mandalorian, like, what if he doesn't like Boba because of Jango, you know, doing the whole cloning thing? Like, what if he sees Boba as an abomination and a Boba nation, if you will? Sorry. What if he sees him as an abomination? Is like, no, you don't deserve this armor. And then they have to have a fight over it.
Yeah.
Like, it could go any direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. Do you think we're going to find... We know that Ahsoka shows up. What do you think is going to be? What do you think is going to happen with the child by the end of this season?
I just hope he gets. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, more powerful.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
I think that the child is going to have a Beskar crib. And it's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. I do think we're going to get some kind of more... I would guess that by the end of this season, we know a significant amount more about the child's origins. You know, in terms of, is it just a child of, you know, two members of Yoda's species? Is this a cloning thing? Like, is it a clone of Yoda or of someone else of the species? I think we're going to be nowhere nearer to finding those people, but we're going to have some other big piece of the mystery revealed. That'd be my guess.
You know, I think they might have laid a little bit of a breadcrumb trail for us with the lady in the spaceport when she was like, "If that thing ever buds or or replicates or
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean."
Because that's, you know, that's not something that we've necessarily seen in or even had discussed in the Star Wars universe. Is like how do alien races procreate? How do they replicate? How did Baby Yoda come to be?
I'm picturing it like Gremlins in my head. Did somebody pour like water on them?
Yeah,
just a little bunch of little ones.
Jeff, what you're saying is that we've now gotten Chekhov's Yoda's reproductive system.
Like, yes.
It's been announced in Act 1, so it has to go off by Act 6 or 7.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
I can see that.
I thought it was, I guess the last thing that I really want to say about this episode in particular, I thought it was really funny how ill-fitting the armor was on Timothy Olyphant. It's like, it's like they went to the Walmart locally and were like, let's get a Boba Fett child's costume and stick this on Timothy Olyphant.
He just walked out of Halloween Adventure.
Yeah, he was like, let's pew, pew. Halloween.
And it was so fitting, I think, because it really reminds you that this armor is perfectly crafted to the person. You know, there's no such thing as off-the-rack Beskar armor.
Right.
So, of course,
secondhand.
Yeah, of course it doesn't fit him well.
Yeah, his stomach was like super exposed, and like he had so much of his sides exposed. I was like, this doesn't protect him.
Yeah,
the same way that it protects Mando.
No, it doesn't.
I knew it was like, Timothy
Olyphant. The arms. What are you guys doing?
Because of because of that, it's so open. But I knew it was Timothy Olyphant because of his torso. I swear. Before he even talked, I'm like, I know that bod.
The thirst identification system is still strong.
Yeah. Well, then, like, he pulls his helmet off, and Ash was, like, immediately, like, his hair is fabulous.
He always has the most fabulous hair. He's going salt and pepper now. I love it.
Have you seen him in Hitman?
No.
He was bald.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to come back in some way, or are we probably leaving that part of Tatooine behind?
I hope they cross paths again.
Me too.
Seems very likely to me.
Like, as much as I liked the, you know, a new planet each time, I think it would be nice if we maybe develop, like, a little bit more of an ensemble of characters who we kind of hang out with for a little bit of a season and see grow in some interesting ways.
Yeah. Oh, shit. He's our Queel. He's our Queel this season.
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, that could really work. Yeah, I could like that. So Boba Fett's going to kill him.
No.
That has to happen.
Yeah, in, like, the second to last episode.
I wouldn't assume that, like, the Mandalorian and Boba Fett are necessarily going to be at odds.
Yeah, I mean, on team they're going to get along and work together. I'm with you, Paul.
It's definitely possible, but yeah. I feel like it could go either way. And, you know.
Here's what I'm looking forward to. Boba Fett is going to meet Cara Dune. And be, like, smitten immediately. And be hitting on her the whole time.
I mean, we know that he has a habit of, like, you know, he had a real fondness for Twilight Dancing Girls.
Who doesn't?
I mean, you know, I'm just saying, like, Boba was a bit of a flirt in Jabba's Palace. We established that, so.
Yep. You know, speaking of Twi'leks, I thought it was pretty cool in this episode that we got to see, like, a different kind rather than like the lithe, like roguish, you know, sneaky, stabby kind of Twi'lek. We got the bouncer Twi'lek.
Oh yeah.
The guy who was just like, hey, man, who you here for?
Right.
Like, stops him at the door. He's like, all right, enjoy the fight. And like shows up and is like a brawler and super strong. I love it.
We got that a little bit in season one because the woman who was part of the team to break into the prison ship was not a dancer, but was of the like, ooh, I'm, you know, sneaky assassin type. But then her brother was definitely just like a big bruiser type. But you're right. It's nice to see that again.
He wasn't big though. He wasn't that big. He was bigger than her, but he was still kind of like sneaky stabby kind of guy.
Mm, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Like I wouldn't put him at barbarian level by any means, but like he was, I would say he's a fighter.
Okay.
He might be a dex fighter.
Okay. Got it. But not just like a strength is the main stat.
Right. Right. He didn't stat dump into strength.
Anyone else? Any last thoughts before we close out?
No. I think we covered a lot.
Cool.
Looking forward to being able to say this is the Bay.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. Cara Dune has to come back, right? I mean, we know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I mean, she was in the marketing.
Yeah. Well, as we've discussed, the marketing can't lie. Though I think if Cara Dune comes back for 10 seconds and then she's killed, I think Jeff will stop watching the show.
I'm going to revolt if that's the case.
Yeah, hard pass on that.
Well, folks, we can't binge it this time. So we have an entire week before the next episode comes out. You've heard what the four of us have to say. What do you all think? We'd love to get some discussion going on Facebook or on Twitter. You can find us, our Facebook and our Twitter by searching for Star Wars Universe Podcast. Some scalawags have also started the Star Wars Universe Podcast. The fact that they started it before us, I think, but does not make it any less rude. I just for some reason didn't find. I searched pretty diligently when I started this podcast for anything else with the same name, and I couldn't find it. And then now it comes up. But either way, the best way to find us though is just go to strandedpanda.com, and there you can just click on Star Wars Universe Podcast and find all the other find everything about how to contact us. Join in the conversation. We'd love to hear you. We'd love to hear about all the things you're doing. We're not going to go the full roundup, but I know, Jeff, you're on a number of the other MCU podcasts, which are doing a couple of big things coming up, especially something tomorrow. So do you want to quick talk about what's going on Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday on Halloween, basically, 2020. We are at noon Central Time, Central U.S. time, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We are having a live recording of our 500th episode of the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast.
Ooh, congrats. That's one hell of an achievement.
It is so much. Oh, my God. We've been doing this for like 6.5 years at this point. But yeah, we're live recording our 500th episode. We're going to have a bit of a Halloween party. We've got Halloween-themed trivia that has been crafted. I've procured a list of words for a Halloween spooky, whatever we want to call it, themed code names game.
Nice.
Cool. It's going to be a great time. So if anybody wants to join us for that, come to twitch.tv/strandedpandatv, and it's going to be a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Come drink with us.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely check that out. Both Ashley and Paul have been frequent guests on this and will be on again, but I would just say Ashley does a lot of great stuff on the Stranded Panda Network, on PandaVision. She just dropped a whole episode about spookiness and Sam Raimi. Definitely check that out. And then Paul, I know a lot of his stuff can be found under Zen Madman. So check all that out. Thank you guys all so much for being fans. Really excited for the next season. Have a great day.
We have spoken.
Booty.